Good day, Internet.
Hello.
Oh, hi, friends. How are you?
And a happy Thursday to all. Yeah, unless it's Friday for you.
Pretty good Thursday. Why does Thursday always feel like a Friday to me? Is it because I just want to get my foot into the weekend door? Like every week, I think Thursday is a Friday.
Well, Thursday, I've always kind of felt like Thursdays are Fridays since college, when Thursdays were effectively Friday.
Because you didn't have, you scheduled no classes on Friday?
Well, also because I was working at a five-day-a-week newspaper, so Sunday night was kind of the beginning of the week to get out the Monday paper, and Thursday was the end of the week because you had already gotten out the Friday. So that was when things kind of ended. And then also, of course, you know, as you move on in your collegiate career, you schedule less Friday classes.
It's true.
I don't remember doing that in college on Fridays. I should have.
Unfortunately, I could only schedule what was available. So I would have like a Thursday or a Tuesday with no classes, but that's just because that's the way available classes worked out.
Maybe it was more of a Syracuse thing than a private school thing, but there wasn't a lot of classes on Friday in general. So it's like you'd wind up getting stuck with a few early morning and Friday classes to be avoided at all cost.
Justin, wanted to ask you, are you on Twitch every weekday?
I am, yeah.
And for the same amount of time every day?
Not necessarily. So I'll do all the podcasts and stuff on there, but then I'll usually just do a little, you know, prep slash talking to the chat for about an hour beforehand for each day. So I'll try to get at least an hour, if not an hour and a half of just farting around. And then on Fridays, I do a Twitch only. It's like the audio goes out to patrons, but that's just a call-in show where I just really just horse off with the audience, called the Friday Hype Train.
Nice. Come on, right, the hype train. Woo, woo.
Did you have any questions about Twitch?
No, I was just curious. I was just like, I know you do it every day, but I wasn't sure if it was like specific agenda, same time, always have a guest.
I don't know. It's all pretty much all the stuff that I've kind of developed is very lazy, in that I just kind of talking to the audience. Let's wring every bit of interest you can out of one man for juiced and squeezed daily. Mm-hmm. At twitch.tv/Justin.
Hey, Juice and Squeeze. That sounds like a good name for a podcast.
Juice and Squeeze.
It could be like a buddy cop show. This is Juice and Squeeze.
That's not a bad idea.
And you'll need to read the patron open today, Sarah.
Okay.
But let me put your name in the seals. Oh, did you see my message about adding an additional mail to the mailbag?
No, but let me look at it. Okay. Yeah. I saw that one too.
Chinami. Oh, I should probably just put her name at the front.
So, Justin, just for reference on that email, because you are reading it. Yeah. We were talking about kids cheating via smartwatches.
Ooh.
Or sticking stuff under their watch, under like the band, and they could pull out their little crib notes.
I mean, but that's not new, right?
No. Just cheating using technology.
Cheating using technology. Yesterday, Cher discussed smartwatches as a possible use for cheating.
Ooh. I think it's... Everything's just moved to a digital realm.
Yeah.
I think we all feel like it's Friday because it's been a long week.
Yes.
Good grief.
Good
anyone
thing
else?
You know, this is what I've learned. And I learned this through Graham Hancock, because we were talking about like why some days feel busy or longer than others. It says like the way you process time is based on the amount of things you need to get done. Right, in a day. And so the more things you need to do, the longer the day feels, even though, you know, time is.
Wait, really? Mine would be the opposite.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, if I'm like locked and loaded all day, and I've like from the second I wake up to the second I go to sleep, I'm doing stuff, the day flies. If I have nothing, oh my God, does it drag?
Yeah, because if you're like constantly meeting deadlines all day, you're like racing the clock, right?
Yeah, effectively. Yeah. I think it's like when I used to drive long distances, I had to start to convince myself, and I'd be curious to see if any like truckers who are listening to this version of the show.
We have some truck driver fans, in fact.
Oh yeah, no, truck podcasting huge in the truck driving community. That and satellite radio. Because I had to convince myself that I'm just never getting out of the car. Not because I was fatalistic, but because I needed to train myself to stop thinking about time, because it would go faster the less I thought about time. And I feel like that's what, during the day, that's what I'm trying to battle against, is just thinking about what time it is, thinking about how much time I have. I'd rather be rocking and rolling and always up against the clock of like, I only got 10 minutes. Let me just try to do as much as I can. And now we're beginning another thing. And now we're doing another thing.
Well, yeah, I think all of us who have been doing live shows for as long as we have, like, there's a good thing about always having deadlines, because you know where you have to be.
Yeah,
exactly.
But sometimes you're like, okay,
I got to be here today. Right now. Right, yeah. And it sucks, especially if you have things like doctor's appointments, which are not always the most flexible to get around, or, schedule.
Yeah, like, you throw it off a little bit and all of a sudden everything's out of
whack. I can't do that. I have a live show at that exact time. It's weird. I actually miss doing the live screensavers or call for help. There's a certain tempo or rhythm, kind of like jogging. Once you get the rhythm going, everything seems to fall in place. It's kind of when you start up and then stop and start up and then stop, it just kind of like throws you off.
Well, and I mean, those days were still big crews, you know, 10 people in the control room, where now it's just Roger.
It's Chris Adair or Miriam. Talk to who was the CG operator? It was moved to floor. Gambert, Steffi Gambert.
Oh yeah.
And then it was trying to remember her name. She had glasses, short curly hair. I talked to her at length about dental work. orthodontic work, because I was freaked out because I saw an orthodontist who said I needed to have surgery on my jaw right away because I have an open bite. It was telling me how long it would take, and I was like, a year? This whole process can take a year? The operation, I need my jaw wired shut.
Which you didn't have, right?
No, I didn't, because I was so freaked out. I had two more opinions on it. And the second guy was with the orthodontist who actually had that surgery. It's like, yeah, you don't need it. Like, if you could get through life the way you are now, don't do it. because there's so many horror stories about jaw surgery, about like once you get it, your jaw never really works the same way again, which is kind of why you do it. But like when people say that, it doesn't sound good. It just sounds like your jaw never works the same way again. It's like a threat. It's like, all right.
Well, what was the reason that he said it was so urgent?
I don't know if you had to pay off a boat or something, but he just made it seem really like you can't leave it like that. He was telling you, like, you know, he didn't give specifics, but he gave a lot of urgency. A lot of urgency. So I got 4 kids in alimony. I need to pay them all off. You're my ticket out of here.
Well, I had braces 3 times, so I'm a sucker for orthodontic work as well.
But like, don't you get annoyed? Have you ever had a medical professional kind of, you think, was giving you a hard sell on something that you didn't really think you needed?
I mean, nothing life-threatening. cosmetic stuff, sure. Yeah, like want a pretty smile, got to do it today. That kind of thing. But no, not like anything that I thought was malpractice-ish.
Yeah, I mean, like nothing like if you don't do this, you're going to die. But more like, you know, your life would be a lot more comfortable if you had this, whatever. Nothing. I used to get it from my old dentist all the time. Really bugged me. Try to sell me in $400 toothbrushes.
Yeah, my old dentist was kind of a hustler too.
I have a problem with dentists. Like not in general, like not as a practice. I'm just saying that if we're going to go from the grand scheme of all doctors, either.
Oh, I'm going to start the YouTube broadcast right now.
All okay. Right.
Oh, you don't have to stop. You can.
Oh, okay. Hey, good day, internet. I'm going to start with some doctor slander. So, if we're going to say that at the top of the food chain for doctors, or however you want to classify it, either tremendous technicians who know exactly how to do complicated and life altering procedures, and you know, maybe some form of like your kindly family general practitioner that provides that kind of bedside manner that makes your life better and catches things early. And down at the bottom would be like chiropractors or like Dr. Nick from The Simpsons. I would find that dentists in general are closer to the bottom than they are the top. Now, that's not to say that there's no good dentists. I'm sure that there's probably a dentist listening right now. That's probably fantastic.
Some of my best friends are dentists.
I've just had more bad experiences with dentists than I have had with any other medical field.
Profession.
They tend to be surly, angry, looking to put me into medical procedures that I probably don't need.
Wait, where are you getting your dentist from? It sounds
I don't know. I mean, throughout my entire life, multiple.
I will say Dr. Pack, who was my last dentist, was great. He was he practices out of San Francisco, but my wife uses him too, and he loves him. She loved him because he would do the procedure, but he's like, you know, you don't really need this, but this is what you'll benefit. These are the benefits. This is the cost. You know, you're going to have to make the decision, but he was extremely competent. He gave me a night guard that actually fit after the first two I got from my previous dentist. I always woke up with like a slightly aching jaw. It's like, yeah, it's just a sign of a ill-fitting night guard. I'll make you a new one. I mean, it cost me like $500, but man, I still use it to this day.
Maybe
to be fair, like bad breath and bad mouths. It doesn't sound fun to me either.
Maybe it's because you have a beard. That's it.
Maybe it's like, because everybody always gets on people at the airport, right? Like TSA agents or gate agents or people who like flight attendants. When ultimately it's like, look, you got to deal with a lot of angry people fairly constantly. Like that'll make for a bad day. All right. I'm going to use the bathroom real quick and then we can get started.
All right.
Okay.
And you're still recording, right, Sarah?
I am. Yeah. And the recording, I listened to it. It was fine.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yay.
Let me make sure you can hear this. Is this too low?
It's good.
Because I heard the last one on the end of the show yesterday, and it was blowing you out a little bit. So I'm making a conscious effort to keep it at a couple of notches lower.
Okay. Well, thanks to everybody who has been so nice to us this week. A lot of good feedback. I think it just goes to show that we have a really solid team.
Yeah. No, good, solid team. Sarah's great. You know,
you're great.
Very, very, very charismatic. It's very...
good.
You have like our contributors who are great, like Justin, who just finished using the bathroom.
I did. I probably shouldn't have announced it. I should have just left. Instead, I did what I did, and I apologize.
Well, you know.
Don't apologize for the thing nature has designed you to do.
The call of the wild.
We all do it. Hey, who wants to do a show?
Let's do a show, huh?
All right. So give yourself 3 second count in, Sarah, and then just
wait, hold on. And I'm recording, right?
Yes.
All right. Let me get that
and then just
going real quick. Go.
Okay. In 3, 2. Daily Tech News Show is powered by you. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for May 17th, 2018. From Studio Feline, I am Sarah Lane. Tom Merritt is out of the country this week.
And from Oakland, California, I'm Justin Robert Young.
Justin, 2 in 1 week. Thank God.
You know, but and that pales in comparison to the work that you guys have been doing, holding this place up while Tom traipses around Australia.
Yeah, no, it's great. Could not do it without you guys. Definitely could not do it without producer Roger Chang. Roger, what's going on the east side?
Not much. It's a little cooler today, but you know what? It's a nice day. It's a nice sunny day that isn't blaringly hot.
Well, all right. We could not ask for more in mid-May in the LA basin. All right. Without further ado, let's start with a few tech things you should know. Uber's former chief security officer, Joe Sullivan, who was reportedly fired after Uber suffered a data breach last year that affected 57 million riders and drivers, big breach, has a new job as CSO of Cloudflare. Cloudflare is a security company, speeds up websites and aims to protect them from outside attacks. The company also said last year it's aiming for a mid-2018 IPO.
Interesting. The U.S. Senate voted Wednesday to reverse the Federal Communication Commission's repeal of the net neutrality rules by approving a Congressional Review Act resolution that would reverse the FCC's vote to deregulate the broadcast industry back in December. If the CRA is approved by the House and signed by President Trump, ISPs would have to comply. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai has scheduled his repeal to take effect on June 11th if Congress does not act. However, it is less likely that this will pass both houses or both parts of our government and then get signed.
I mean, kind of no one believes that it will, right?
Nobody believes that it will. So we have to cover it, right? You never know. Stranger things have happened in our modern political landscape, but unlikely.
Let's move on to a streaming music service we actually don't talk about as much as Spotify and Apple Music. A publication in Norway, and I cannot pronounce the name of this publication.
I'll take a guess.
Do it.
Dagens Nyhedsliv.
That's probably better than what I would have done. Anyway, they report that streaming music service Tidal is months behind on payments to music labels, specifically the Big Three. In a statement to The Verge, a Tidal spokesperson said, "We've experienced negative stories about Tidal since its inception, and we have done nothing but grow the business each year."
This comes on the heels of some inflation accusations on how much some of their exclusives actually streamed.
Yeah, I mean, a Sony spokesperson told this Norway publication, supposedly, 6 months, no royalties.
It's not so good at all.
If that was the case, that would be really bad. All right, let's talk a little more about YouTube. Boy, Google companies love to rename themselves, don't they?
Well, Alphabet, thank you, the company that owns Google, that owns YouTube, or I guess YouTube is its own Alphabet company. YouTube is splitting up YouTube Red into two services and renaming everything. Recode reports that YouTube will launch a revamped music service next Tuesday called YouTube Music. It'll cost $10 a month after a trial period, same price as before to strip out ads, download music for offline listening, and play music in the background. But YouTube will now charge $2 more to watch its original content previously on YouTube Red, and that will be called YouTube Premium. Existing YouTube Red subscribers will stay at the $10 a month tier, and YouTube Music will replace Google Play Music eventually. Everybody clear?
Yes, but my goodness. for the record,
Yeah.
I always thought that YouTube Red was a curious choice, considering that there is a Red Tube. Nobody look it up.
No, not, just trust Sarah. It's a Red Tube. Yeah.
But, okay, this seems to me like YouTube is hedging on other competitor companies like Apple, for example, who is, you know, Apple's obviously working on their own original content. Haven't really seen any of that yet, but sort of figuring out like YouTube Music is one thing. If you want original content, then that's an additional thing.
Sure. Which even Amazon, which does bundle some of its music streaming along with its premium content as part of its Prime package, still does split out their full music playing service into its own product. So that's not necessarily a shock, nor is it necessarily a shock that Google has renamed something for the millionth time, as this is kind of their favorite thing to do. Ultimately, they do have a problem when it comes to music. There is a gigantic audience that listens to music on YouTube. However, there could be an argument made that they do it because it's free, not because YouTube is necessarily the best place to listen to music. It's just that when you randomly are looking for a song, you can probably find it because somebody has freebooted it, or Vivo has done a very good job of making sure that these major label artists from then, now, forever have their music up there for people to sample. The question now for YouTube Premium, formerly YouTube Red, is can they make a breakout hit and sustain it that makes people want to pay monthly for their ability? Look how hard Netflix works at it. Look how hard Hulu's worked at it and really only broke through with Handmaid's Tale last year beyond just being able to stream the stuff that you already are able to see. Do you have faith that YouTube, Cobra Kai is getting good reviews, right? It's an interesting idea, but are you ready to shell out yet another monthly subscription so you can see Prem content?
Well, and if I understand the restructuring correctly, you can't get YouTube Premium without also paying for YouTube Music, right?
Yeah.
So you're either paying $10 for the music, which is, you know, that's industry standard price, or you're paying $12 for original content, and then, but you can't get the original content on its own.
So this is really, when you look at it, this is not necessarily, you're sure they are splitting it into two products, but they're just raising the price of YouTube Red $2 and giving you an option to not do the video.
Cobra Kai, have you seen it?
I don't know. People say they like it.
Yeah, same.
Like,
well, in other Google news, Google's AI-powered voice assistant Duplex, we've talked about it ad nauseum on the show, that the company showed off at I.O. is raising a few questions. The big question is, was that live demo at I.O., which demonstrated Duplex calling a business to schedule an appointment, really live? Was it pre-recorded? Or was it otherwise staged? Now, the reason that everyone is pretty confused is because Axios asked Google for the business name used in the demo. They didn't disclose it at the time. It was just sort of like a rando business. And a Google spokesperson declined more than once to say whether it was live or not.
Yeah.
Which is not the end of the world, but it does raise some questions about, hey, do you have a product that's ready? Or, you know, did you just want to save face during a very, very important conference for yourself?
Yeah. And obviously this is kind of evocative of the famous moment in Apple's one of the Apple press conferences where Steve Jobs prank called a Starbucks and told them to, you know, that they were going to come over for 8,000 coffees or something. I didn't think, when you watched that, did you think that was live?
Well, you know, I didn't think about it, except that there were a few points that other people pointed out. For example, if that was really a business, usually when someone answers the phone, it's like, hi, this is so-and-so hair salon. Yeah. I'm Jessica. How can I help you? You know, like there are certain things that feel right.
Yeah.
And none of that was part of it.
So it felt to me when it played that this was, at a certain point on the radio, you had to stop doing live prank calls. And so all the prank calls kind of had to be recorded and you have to get somebody's permission to be on the radio before you're allowed to do it. And it felt to me like that. Like it was something where they did it. They made sure they got the best version of it. They tried to do it a bunch of times. They got the best version. And then, as you know, they wound up cutting the name out. Although now that I think about it, why would, if the salon then gave their permission to put this out there, why wouldn't they want their name out there if this is going to be a big thing that'll be out there? Like, if you're some Palo Alto hair salon, you know, there's only so many. Why don't you want international publicity?
Well, sure. And I mean, if everybody was briefed beforehand, and of course, everybody wants everything to be seamless on a stage, and that's a whole thing. So it, like, I get that, you know, there might have been a little bit of prep. But if Google actually ran some pre-recorded thing, that would probably be bad. I'm just saying that people are starting to wonder.
If they staged all of it, I think it makes the demo less impressive. If that was a Google employee that was being called, or even soft staged, I think that that's an issue. At least to me, it makes it less impressive. And it gives me less of an idea that this technology is as robust as I initially thought it was. And that's, I think, the larger technological question underpinning this otherwise kind of like showmanship query.
Yeah, exactly.
Microsoft revealed the Xbox Adaptive Controller Thursday, designed for gamers with disabilities. Microsoft says it took input from Able Gamers, Warfighter Engage, Special Effect, Craig Hospital, and Cerebral Palsy Foundation to create the Adaptive Controller. It connects to the Xbox One or Windows 10 PC via Bluetooth and powers on just like the Xbox Elite Controller. The controller is an 11x6-inch rectangle with two buttons that are light touch enabled, two USB-C ports, and a 19 3.5-millimeter ports along the backside, which allows players to plug in their existing accessibility tools. The Xbox Adaptive Controller will cost $100 when it goes on sale later this year. In other news, Apple is partnering with Schools for the Blind, Deaf, and Assistive Needs students with its Everyone Can Code curriculum for Swift, Apple's programming language. The program is designed to introduce coding to students through the Swift Playgrounds iPad app. 8 schools in California, Massachusetts, Texas, Florida, Illinois, and New York are participating in the rollout this fall. Today's announcements do coincide with the Global Accessibility Awareness Day.
Oh, this is such feel-good stuff, man.
Yeah, right? You always love any kind of accessibility story always makes me feel that is the ultimate tech done good kind of story, right?
And what's cool about the Xbox Adaptive Controller, again, if I understand it, you know, correctly, accessibility wise, is once you can plug in your existing accessibility tools that, you know, allows you to do all sorts of things, you can also kind of program the device itself to make it work for you.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing is they're developing what is kind of like even a hardware platform, right? That they're not trying to solve every issue. They just know that there are a lot of issues that require specific different plugins, and they are going to give you the ability to do that in something that will work, that is put out by Microsoft. And, you know, $100 for something that can do as much as that is, I think, is a fairly good price point.
You know, big companies like this, like when they do stuff like this, I'm like, good for you. But knowing that it's a for-profit company with a bottom line, I think it also just illustrates that there are a lot of people with various disabilities that have special needs, and, you know, they're consumers like anybody else, and stuff that is customized in this way, you know, puts us all on the same playing field. So
yeah. And look, how many times do you find a product and say, this is exactly what I need? Imagine if there were none of those products, which a lot of folks who have accessibility issues constantly run their head into, and that's, it's good that they have it there.
In other hardware news, Intel's long-delayed 10-nanometer processor design will ship this year in the Lenovo IdeaPad 330. This is according to computerbase.de on the Chinese e-commerce site JD.com. A lot of sources these days. So Roger pointed out to me before the show that this is a long time coming. It was originally planned for 2015. The Core i3-812U processor is based on the Cannon Lake architecture, offers 2 cores and 4 threads at 2.2 to 3.2 gigahertz, 4 megabytes of smart cache, supports up to 32 gigabytes of low-power DDR4 RAM with a memory bandwidth of 41.6 gigabytes per second. We don't have any details on integrated graphics, and the Lenovo IdeaPad 3:30 will come with an AMD RX 540 GPU. Boy, do I love hardware specs.
It's one of those challenges on DTNS where you have to do your
you know, sometimes it's seamless, usually it isn't. But Raj, so, you know, I mean, was it delayed to the point that it seemed like vaporware?
Not so much vaporware, but it definitely hinted that Intel might be encountering difficulties in the fabrication process. And that's why a lot of people was like, well, they're extending out Kaby Lake and the rest of their existing processor line to kind of bridge over that gap. And some would say that the difficulties they had in basically to the 10 nanometer fabrication size was such a leap that they had to change their process model from the TikTok to the new one, which is like, you know, you develop new architecture, you hone it on the next one, and you hone it even further on the next. So instead of going on the every 2 year cycle, would be a 3 or 4 year cycle. So it's good to see. It does raise some questions because up until now, a lot of the Intel core processors, even the low end ones, featured built in video. And you know whether or not the video was absent from this because they just couldn't get it in there with the fabrication process is now, or because it's a low end part and they want to save it for some of the mid higher range models that they plan on having come down the pipe remains to be seen. So more questions than answers, but it's nice to see that this is finally rolled out.
All right. To get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes or less, subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. It's a great companion show to this one.
Absolutely.
Justin, let's talk about online gambling.
Oh, folks, we're setting the over-under at 10.5 for how many emails we're going to get about this topic because we're talking gambling, folks. Get your money out. The Supreme Court ruled to overturn the Amateur Sports Protection Act of 1992 this week. That was a case brought by New Jersey, the state of New Jersey, which tried to get around it themselves with state legislatures. This effectively means that states can create their own rules on sports betting. So, what does this mean? The short answer is we have no idea. There are a million different ways that this can possibly go. Congress can decide federally that they are going to set up a framework for how this stuff can go. That is something that the major sports leagues like NBA and the NFL have asked for. But as it is now, if Congress does what Congress often does, which is nothing, then states will now be able to decide, as New Jersey will aggressively do, because they had already planned on this earlier, to now legalize sports betting however they want. Which brings us down to the sub question: who will be able to gamble to take sports wagers, and who won't? You're going to probably guess that a lot of the entities that have some gambling rights in the states will probably eat first on this. You're talking about Indian casinos, dog tracks, horse tracks, stuff like that. But it also opens up a tremendous opportunity for apps that already have gigantic footholds in this industry, like FanDuel and DraftKings. These, while you could watch an ad for either of them and some schlub saying, oh, I didn't have any interest in these games, and now I all of a sudden have interest, sounds like what you would do if you would like to wager on it, was really taking advantage of the fact that fantasy leagues are legal. And this came after the great crackdown on online poker. There was a carve out for fantasy leagues. So this was a daily fantasy league that operated very similar to gambling, but you couldn't outright say, I'm going to bet on the Golden State Warriors to beat the Houston Rockets the next time that they play, in the way that now, if they wanted to go into this position, they could be able to.
So, you know, you mentioned two NBA teams. Is there anything under the Sports Protection Act that has actual sports that are covered under this? Or do people try to kind of get around it by being like, it's a sport?
No.
Or does it have to be like the NHL and the NBA and the NFL?
So effectively that law just made it prohibitive for anybody to really put any kind of money into creating a wagering business, beyond places where it was already carved out, like Las Vegas, for example. And that's why FanDuel and DraftKings was an interesting play into that space without kind of getting into those waters. What's interesting now is you saw Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, make the case this week that every owner's team just doubled in value, because Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, has also been forthright in saying when betting comes to fruition here in America, we want to be in on it. The NBA does. We want a cut of every bet that happens because we want the money to, quote unquote, be able to make sure that people aren't fixing games. So we need to wet our beak on this. This is one of the myriad questions that we are going to have to answer. However, technology is going to play a gigantic part in this. Not only have you had FanDuel and DraftKings become just huge apps in and of themselves, but also current casinos in Vegas. If you go to Vegas, in fact, if you're not in Vegas, you can download apps for Caesars, Westgate, Station, just to name a few. You have to be in Nevada to wager on them, and they make you use mobile data so they can verify that. They don't let you a wager if you are on Wi-Fi, for example, but geofenced apps for the foreseeable future, and until we get a federal legislation on this, might be really where this happens. But if that's the case, then a startup company that just does wagering and then turns it on state by state could very much come into play.
Okay. Dumb question.
Go.
As a non-gambler, I don't know anything about this stuff.
Sure.
If you use a VPN out of the state that you're supposed to be placing a wager in, now what?
Theoretically, you can break the law to gamble.
In fact, they go hand in hand half the time.
Yeah. In fact, when we talk about how big this is, we are talking about a multi-billion dollar illegal industry. And many people now vet over the internet. A friend of mine has told me that it's fairly simple, although a little dodgy, to put your money in an offshore account and then place your bets through a site that is outside of the jurisdiction of America, where it is illegal. Now, you don't have the protections that you would have. That site can just go away, and now all of your money is gone with it. But it's a competitive enough industry that has not happened on a gigantic scale as of yet. I mean, that's save for some of the big poker sites going down and people losing money there.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think, because it is legalized, that the need or the impetus to move into cryptocurrency in order to engage in that, sports betting activity isn't as strong? And so there might be less of a push or for the run for the gates for cryptocurrency in order to gamble, because hey, now I can just use dollars that I have in my bank account to bet with.
Cryptocurrency, I don't think really ever had kind of a handle on gambling. You're fairly easily able to transfer stuff from your bank to another bank that is outside of the United States and just go on from there. So I don't think it's necessarily a crypto angle. Here's where it does get very, very interesting in terms of the big players in tech. It goes hand in hand, specifically if the sports leagues who are authorizing their carriage rights want to be cut in on bets, that they might incentivize the platforms that they are streaming their games on to also be places where you can place bets. So not only their own apps, if they do that, but platforms like YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, or anywhere else that might want to eventually stream games could also see a tremendous amount of money processing sports wagers in places that are legal. This is a massive wellspring of cash. This is billions of dollars coming from an unregulated black market into the light, and people will clamor for it, and technology is going to have to be at the forefront.
Well, I would say weird, but 2018 is the weirdest year yet.
Indeed.
For a lot of us anyway. Hey, thanks to everybody who supports us in our subreddit. You help us choose our stories and we get to know what you're interested in. You can submit stories and also vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We also have a Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. So Justin, yesterday, Scott Johnson and I were talking about the fact that neither of us ever had DVRs when they were cool back in the day. And now we have DirecTV's new DVR, which is a true DVR. And Jordan wanted to make sure that we know the difference between DVR and true. He said, I've tried Sling TV and PlayStation View. They have so-called DVR, but the big problem is that these recordings are really just replaced with on-demand versions. They also have ads and you can't skip them. So that's a huge step back from what I did with my DVR already. With a true DVR in DirecTV Now, they're promising actual recordings in which you can fast forward through ads. I hope it works like they say it does. And it also explains why it probably took longer for them to bring it to market. Yeah, because they introduced it last year.
Oh man, I remember I used to have my DVR like record Mad Men. I would know exactly the length of their ad breaks so I could have my 15-second skip routine already down. Perfect. I would love it. Meanwhile, Chinami emailed us, hey, DTNS crew, yesterday's show discussed smartwatches and their possible use in cheating. Sarah made the comment that watches have been around for a long time and they are only thinking of their use in cheating now. I took the GRE in the early aughts and always wore a digital watch. I had to put it in the locker along with all my other stuff to prevent me from cheating. So to me, this is not anything new. Love the show and proud to be a supporter.
I can't tell if Chinami is saying that someone made him put his watch in the locker or if they did it just to, you know, keep themselves honest.
I would suspect that it was a proctor, that there are certain things that you could not have on you. You know, I can't remember if people had to take off watches and stuff for SATs back when I was taking them. But I would say for this, look, this isn't about the GREs. This isn't about the ACTs or the SATs. This is for day in and day out pop quiz. If you can have somebody, you know, pop the answers, you can have an app that just has these things stored for you. You know, it is just the newest front in the never ending war on cheating.
It really is. Kids cheat. I mean, not all kids. Some kids, but you know, kids will be kids. Justin Robert Young, thank you for joining me and getting me through the show. It was a big news show, and I really appreciate everything that you do for us. Every time you're on the show, let folks know where they can keep up with your other work.
Well, thank you. Folks, you can go ahead and subscribe to my free political newsletter at freepoliticalnewsletter.com. It is, I think, a great way that if you're not into politics, but you want a way to kind of stay on top of things, this is very light, very fun. 5 stories every morning, Monday through Friday, wherein you get a little bit of commentary, not a lot, some gifts, mostly from the Chappelle Show. So go ahead and check it out. It is free, after all, freepoliticalnewsletter.com.
And thanks to our patrons and everybody who supports the show, patreon.com/DTNS. Lots of exclusive content there and extra stuff. And also, if you're looking to buy a new sweatshirt, new baseball cap, maybe a t-shirt, maybe a mug, dailytechnewsshow.com/store is where you can see all the stuff that we are offering. It's really cool. Give it a shot. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We love your feedback. We're also live Monday through Friday. If you can join us at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. Back tomorrow with Shannon Morse and Len Peralta. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
'Great job, folks.
Good job, Justin.
Awesome. Awesome. That was great. That was perfect, Justin. Like, I literally learned a lot because I don't really gamble. And they were throwing out things like FanDuel and something Kings and blah, blah, blah. It's like 747 over my head.
I mean, effectively, what this could mean is you know, right now Facebook has gotten very heavily into buying sports rights, right? And a lot of these sports leagues are counting as television declines to have these digital players take more and more of a role in bidding these packages up. But part of that could mean on Facebook, if you're watching, you know, the Pirates play the Cardinals, there's a little button down below that says, hey, would you like to bet who's going to win the next inning? And you already have your credit card tied to that account. Next thing you know, you're betting. I mean, in Europe, this is a lot more common. Like you're allowed, you can bet on a game in the stadium.
Huh. You know, it's, to be honest, it's something that never really occurred to me because as a non-gambler, it wasn't something, you know, I would have an eye for. But I mean, for example, so how common is sports betting outside of the U.S. in terms of like professional matches?
Oh, a lot. Very.
Tremendously. Yeah. In Europe specifically, it is gigantic. I mean, I think Ladbrokes is one of the major betting parlors, but like they are all over the place. You go to London, it is like 7-Elevens down there.
I mean, I'm with Roger in the sense that, I don't know, I'm just missing the chip that wants to gamble. I don't really get it, but it just goes to show you, you know, a story like what we talked about a few minutes ago is it's a thing, you know, there's like, I don't know, there's some dopamine, serotonin. I don't even know what, yeah, you know, no. That whole thing. But like, even if you don't have like a gambling addiction, people love gambling.
Well, let me put it this way. Sarah, you're a big Warriors fan, right?
Correct.
So now, huge series, probably the one series that everybody really was looking forward to all season. The Warriors are going to face the Rockets. It's already 1-1. Things are going to be awesome, right? Everybody's watching those games wire to wire. Unfortunately, both those teams are so good that the previous series that they played were maybe not the most interesting. And so if you're not a super fan, maybe it's like as soon as the Warriors are up 20 in the second quarter, maybe it's like, I could catch up on a podcast or maybe it won't pay as much attention to. I'll have it on in the background, but it'll be there, right? With the magic of gambling, we're now... You are not watching. It's, the question is not, will the Warriors win? The question is, will the Warriors win by 15? And now you are subtracting 15 points from that Warrior score. You are way more interested than you would be otherwise, on top of the fact that you have your money riding on it.
I mean, I get what you're saying. I'm just like, yeah. I would never do that.
Sure.
I just hope both teams have a really good time.
Just bring some orange slices and let's get some Gatorade because everyone's going to have a good time at the end.
Exactly.
That's the idea. And to be honest, I'm not a huge table gamer when I go to Vegas, nor am I necessarily a gigantic sports bettor, but I do love, you know, just going in. Maybe one of my first kind of moves when I go to Vegas is just setting up a couple bets sprinkled throughout the my stay there, because it just gives you a little adrenaline. All of a sudden you're doing something and you look up and it's like, oh, come on. I need this random person who I've never rooted for before in my life to do a thing. It's exciting. It's yet another random number generator that we can continue to busy ourselves with while we forget the fact that the specter of death hangs for all of us.
Oh, somebody clip that out.
That is good. That's going to be in your obituary somehow. I have a feeling.
We just want you to have a good day, Internet.
Listen, the Wolves come for us all.
Yeah, I get it. I kind of like hanging out at a craps table for a few minutes. I find it interesting, you know, the math aspect of it and probability and all of that stuff. But like, I don't even want to bet a dollar ever.
Yeah. So this
I'm is like, I have the dollar. It might go away.
Take for this specific issue, think of it less as I think I'm good at craps or I think I'm going to get rich because I'm just doing this thing. And think of it more like we all know people that believe that they know sports better than everybody, right? And they are very loud and braggadocious with their sports opinions. Think of it more as a way that people can take that and put money behind it. Because that's what this is. This is like, all right, I'm arguing with a friend at a bar about who's better, right? Or who's going to win. And now it's like, well, I feel so good. I made such a good a point about it. I'm going to bet it. And you are trying to, now that it's legal, you're taking something that is, again, multi-billion dollar industry. We are talking about a massive, massive amount of money that gets sloshed around legally and illegally. But the illegal number, we don't even really know what the upper cap is on that. And you are bringing that in to a easy to use new market for people that have possibly never tried sports gaming before. Now they would be able to.
So titles wise, we have Online Gambling is Great. Want to bet? There's also What Happens in Vegas Doesn't Stay in Vegas.
This is what happened in Vegas, right?
The Online Chips Have Fallen. Yet, slightly to other news. Want to bet from BioCow? Pretty good. All bets are on. All online. Oh, I like bets that are one. On. All bets are on.
All bets are on, folks.
Cool. Done.
Yay.
Can I read you guys a non-tech story that just came across my?
Please do.
A 25-year-old man. Officials say posed as a 17-year-old so he could play on a high school basketball team.
I saw that story.
Sydney Boivier Gilstrap Portley. Oh my lord, this guy's name. Began the school year at Skyline High School, where he enrolled claiming to be a Hurricane Harvey refugee. Months later, he moved to Hillcrest High School and joined the basketball team. Dallas police said he also dated a 14-year-old class.
The girl. Ooh, man.
Burying the lead.
Yeah.
Ooh, wow. Yeah, like, how do you do that? You just start showing up and no one is like,
I guess so. And this,
what's your social security number?
This dude doesn't look like a 17-year-old at all. He looks like a man. And then he's just dunking on like these teenagers.
Hey, maybe that's how you get through life. You seek out the younger, unskilled rivals, and you just beat them at it. As you get older, time escapes from you.
He also had a collegiate basketball career at Dallas Christian College.
Before the high school?
Before the high school.
That's like the epitome of, have you really thought this one through?
Here's how it all came down. After playing a rival team, the rival team's coach alerted the Hillcrest basketball coach, quote, "One of my former players who graduated a time ago is playing for you."
I mean, I don't know. What, you know, how does that happen? Just don't know how that happens.
Tell you what, you just feel the ever need to dunk on these folks.
It's a crazy story. I remember, and this is when I was in junior high, our social studies teacher read us a story about a man who was like 23 who faked that he was a teen so he could get a high school diploma. And I think at the time I never heard of a GED, right? Like, so I didn't know what that was. Like, why couldn't you just, wasn't there an alternate method to get a high school equivalent degree? But no, it's
very, very interesting to like what the thought process of like, well, I'll never get caught for this.
Well, and what was the goal, you know?
To ball.
No, the diploma guy. Oh. He wanted a diploma, right?
Maybe he didn't understand that you could get a GED through your local junior college. I don't know.
Roger, do you want an MP3 or
an MP3? Yes. Or you could, whatever's easiest for you to send.
Either one's fine. Which would you prefer?
The other one's a wave. WAV.
Yeah.
AFE. Yeah. Send me the wave.
The wave.
Oh, Monday's show, just for a heads up for you, Justin.
Yeah.
We won't actually have a Monday show.
You will not.
We have a show, but it will be Tom's special Australia roundtable show.
Oh, okay. So you do not need me?
No, not Monday, but I will still need you Thursday.
Thursday, you got it, my friend.
It's going to be a special Down Under with Tom Merritt and DTNS.
Two Mondays off for the LA crew.
Wait, what's the? Oh, that's right. The following Memorial. Monday, too.
Memorial I know. Day.
They're going to start DTNS with a didgeridoo.
I hope so.
I wonder if Aboriginal Australians get tired of, like, why do you always play the didgeridoo? Like, you know, there's other things we play.
Do people, when you want to do, like, an American thing, do people, like, play, like the fife? Like, or, like, a colonial drum?
Well, so this is the thing. What I've noticed is when people... Like, and when I say people, I mean British television. Like, they do anything about America, it does either kind of, they do kind of like a Broadway show tune if it's New York. They do rock and roll if it's like something very guy centric, like, and then
like metal, like, yeah. Like, gotcha.
And then if it's something kind of rustic, rural, and like cowboy-y, it's going to be like, you know, banjo and a harmonica.
Yeah. I've noticed that British people, when they do an American voice, it tends to be either New Yorker or Valley Girl. Like, that's the, like, it's like, hey, yo, I'm walking here. Or
who does that?
That's no, like the people, British people write in that it's either like, oh, I'm a New Yorker, like, kind of accent, or it's like, oh my God, like, this is crazy. I'm from America.
I mean, I can't even do a New Yorker accent.
Try, though. Can you try to do a New Yorker accent?
No, I won't.
Just say, just one, I'm walking here.
I'm walking here.
That's good. Why do you think you can't do it?
I feel like a fraud.
There's a difference between, like, a New Yorker, but there's also one for like a Long Island, a New Jersey, a Brooklyn. You know, there's a little.
Wait a minute. Yeah, you can do different accents.
No, I can't. I can't. But I
a New Yorker would say that.
Can you tell the difference between somebody from the Bronx and somebody from Long Island?
From the Bronx and Long Island, yes, but not if they meet in between in Manhattan.
What would you? I mean, like, you don't have to do the voice, but what would you say are the distinguishing linguistic tells?
So for me, a Brooklyn accent sounds more like Rosie Perez, kind of, and then a Bronx, I should say not Brooklyn, Bronx accent sounds more like a
Rosie Perez,
and then a Long Island sounds more like the Long Island medium, you know, where she's like, you know, your father died or something, and he's in this house and he can't go on. Pay me $500 and somehow he'll be on his way. Oh, he wants to tell you something. He loves you very much. And you know that thing you did when you were a kid? He knows about it.
Yeah, wait a minute. What was that thing you did? Yeah, that's what he told me.
Wait, hold on. Are you saying that the way that you can tell somebody's doing a Long Island accent is if they keep talking about my dead relative?
No, there's...
There's a show called The Long Island Medium.
No, I'm aware, but
no,
like
you, no, I'm not saying that's
the voice.
Not,
like, I understand who the Long Island Medium is.
No, like there's a different tonal accent in it.
I would take a guess, although I don't think that I don't know if I would be able to, like, money on the line. I don't know if I would be able to tell the difference between. I think that there are certain ways of talking, right? And so, like, maybe more of like the Mike Myers, like, coffee talk, like, kind of thing is more kind of Queens, Long Island. But I don't, like, if you said, oh no, this person is born and bred in Midtown Manhattan and they've never left Manhattan, then I would be like, all right, sure, that sounds fine.
I, you know, it's kind of weird. I used to have the same thing, trouble with Southern accents. I always thought, like, they all sounded the same. But as time went on and I visited, you know, like Atlanta and Arkansas and Texas, I realized that Texas is a lot harsher, like the accent that they speak with. And like at least in Georgia, like people from Tennessee or Georgia, there's a more of a smoothness to the way they speak. I don't know.
Have you ever seen, this is a great lookup, is for a while, I forget even what he was promoting, but Fred Armisen was doing like talk shows, and his like gimmick was that you could name any city from the South and he would do that exact accent. And because he's a very funny kind of like voice guy, he would always come up with different things and they would sound plausible, but you get like four cities in and you're like, I have no idea. I assume that it's like something, but he would have these like very funny, like, you know, like, well, in like in Tennessee, like the go down.
Some people are really good at that stuff. You know, they're good at the nuances of regions.
Yeah. Well, I have no idea whether or not he was correct. But
I mean, come on, you're from Florida. I'm sure those accents changed from when you like from the like Miami all the way up to the Panhandle.
Well, but that's, I think, number one, 150%. But even then, Florida's kind of a weird thing because there's such a melting pot of different kinds of culture. So you are just as likely to hear somebody with a very thick New York accent as you are to hear somebody with a Cuban, you know, second language English kind of like accent or anything in between.
So my wife's from New Jersey, and one thing that threw me off was that the lower half of New Jersey's accent is very Southern. It's very, like, if you didn't know any better, you would think they were from like below the Mason-Dixon line. But it's just the lower half of New Jersey.
They sound like Philadelphia people.
No, they don't. They talk with a drawl. It's
literally Philadelphia. they're all like oh, like go get the water.
Oh, no, it's some of that, but no, I mean like it's distinctly Southern like sounding.
What are you talking? That's ridiculous.
None of the East Coast makes any sense to me either. People from very northern parts, when you look at a map, call themselves from the South. I'm like, I don't even know. I'm just from California.
Oh, yeah. D.C. was the South.
Yeah, exactly.
No, mid-Atlantic. Because like you wouldn't think, it's only an hour away from Baltimore, and you wouldn't think that Baltimore is the South, right? Or close to the South.
And I don't think that if you're from Baltimore, you would say that either. But they're literally next to each other.
Yeah.
There's just that one line. And on that one line, I bid you all adieu to our YouTube cast for the day. Thank you so much. I hope you learned a great deal about
gambling. Yell at me in your accent, Justin.
See you tomorrow.
We'll see you tomorrow with Shannon Morris and Len Peralta.
Woohoo.
Awesome. That was a great show. And patrons, thank you for supporting us. I am busy working on the newsletter, so hopefully I'll have that out later today, probably early evening, the way I type. Anything else you guys want to say to our most awesome fans?
Only thanks for supporting us, and we love you very much. And we'll see you same time, same place tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you guys for supporting this program.
Program.
Bye.